Who is this juror?
Yeah. First, so, mind you, as soon as they rap and they get found guilty, Juror X gets arrested for bribing the jurors. Because that's a crime. Hello. Welcome to the I'm Not a Lawyer But podcast, a.k.a. The Debrief. Basically, I've been making videos for less than 10 months and... which has been successful, where I recap trials, lawsuits, a bunch of things legal, even though I'm not a lawyer. And then I make these videos and people have liked them. But I've gotten a lot of comments about people saying, where's the podcast? We want more, asking me for a part two, even though I've just did a 10-minute part one. And so that has created this podcast.
Yep.
Where I'm going to be discussing some of the things that I've made videos on, but also maybe some of the things I haven't made a video on. We'll provide some clips and some lawsuit screenshots, all of the above. So that's kind of what we're going to be doing.
This is exciting.
Okay. I'm Mel, by the way. Mel, a.k.a. I'm Not a Lawyer, But mm-hmm. Who are you?
I am Gooseby.
You Mel's, didn't do you. You didn't make your long one.
Gooseby.
All right.
How y'all doing?
So each week we are going to have a bit of an agenda, mm-hmm. which are the topics we're going to cover. So today's agenda, here's what we're going to talk about. YSL, because it's been a mess.
Yes. Crazy.
Karen Reed, because there was a hearing about 2 weeks ago. I'm late, and it was so good. So we're going to talk about that. And then the last one is Vybz Kartel, because there was a conviction. Vybz Kartel is a Jamaican artist, musician, and he had a murder conviction which was overturned. And we're going to get into why it was overturned and the details of that, because it's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
A murder case got overturned?
It was a murder conviction. He was convicted of murder. It got overturned. And the reason why... is absolutely interesting. And the way it all happened, fascinating. Y'all know I'd be all in on this. So let's start with YSL.
YSL. Mr. Bean.
All right.
That's my partner.
You don't know that man. Let me give you a quick recap if you're new to the YSL case. YSL is the case. We call it the YSL case, but basically Jeffrey Williams, a.k.a. Young Thug, the musician.
YSL, Young Slime Life.
Has a whole lot of different, the acronym means a few things.
Oh, yeah, what else?
We're going to go with Young Slime Life.
Okay.
Basically, Young Thug has been on trial with a number of other defendants because the state of Georgia alleges that he is the kingpin, essentially, of the YSL criminal street gang. And he is the kingpin of it. And it's a RICO charge because, if you are unaware, the reason that RICOs are what they allege is that there are criminal activities, there are crimes committed in furtherance of the criminal street gang. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's not just a random person committing a crime for themselves. Say you need some money and you rob somebody, you use that money to pay your bills. That is different than what a RICO alleges, which would be you are a part of a group, a network, and you commit a crime and maybe you rob somebody, but that money doesn't go to like pay your rent. Maybe it goes back to the network of people that you are affiliated with to, I don't know, buy guns, yeah. by Purchase drugs, mm-hmm. by things like that, right? And so that is what the RICO is alleging, that all of these people, all of these defendants, including Young Thug, are members of the YSL street gang, and he is the kingpin, and they committed these crimes to further that gang. Now, let's fast forward to what's happening this week. On September 11th, 2013, okay, this is the context of it, September 11th, 2013, some cops were in an apartment complex, and they heard some gunshots. Okay, they heard some gunshot, and I'm going to prepare some images for you to see. So they're in this apartment complex, and sorry, let me just pull it up. Oh, man. Sorry, guys. Sorry.
While we waiting, y'all seen Mr. Bean being high as hell? Did y'all see this man tripping? That was crazy. I'm talking about wow. Mr. Bean is wild. And it's crazy that his name is Mr. Bean.
Okay, so what happens is they're in this apartment complex and the police hear some gunshots go off. They were actually just in the apartment complex for a completely unrelated reason. But while they're there, some gunshots go off and this red vehicle starts heading towards them. So the officers are like, what's happening? One of the officers exits the car and fires his weapon, okay, at the vehicle. That car then exits the apartment complex that they were in. And I'm just going to...
Do we know if the officers were shot at or the officer was just... shooting at them because they were headed.
Yeah, they
them.
there were gunshots. Mm-hmm. It wasn't directed at them, but there were gunshots, and then the car just started coming towards them. So then the officer gets out of the car and fires his weapon.
Oh, okay.
Okay. The vehicle then leaves the apartment complex and they cross the street, like ram through this house. Go through the backyard of the house, unknowing that the... So this is the house, okay? So they cross over that main street.
They went up the driveway.
They head towards that house. And then they go through the backyard, like I said.
So they didn't go through the house. They went around.
No, so you see that through this backyard here, you see tree.
That cut piece right
there.
So
they go through that. Mm-hmm. And what they don't realize is that the backyard has a drop-off. And so this is, they go through here.
They
hit the house.
That didn't stop the car?
No.
Man.
So the backyard has a drop off. And so what happens is.
I messed up grandma porch.
The vehicle ends up going off of the drop off and landing into a completely separate parking lot.
Oh, it was just like an embankment.
Yeah, okay. You can kind of see that it's starting to drop off. And that's like a bit of a shopping center behind them. It has a laundromat behind them.
Okay.
So when they drop off, they actually fly over a cop car that just happens to be sitting in that parking lot. It's a completely different parking lot. So they fly over the parked police car and end up ramming into the wall of the laundromat.
That's the picture I saw. I didn't know they drove up through, hit the porch, went through the backyard.
So
that's the picture I saw. Okay.
Yeah. So they ended up hitting the side of the wall of the laundromat. And I just want to find one more picture just because I think the context is important to see.
What were they doing? What were they thinking?
So they had been robbing somebody in the apartment complex. And then, of course, they leave the apartment complex. They're in a rush because the police officers have seen them now. They're shooting. So they're just trying to get away.
Okay. This is where I picked up
the
video at. So this is Mr. Bean.
Mr. Bean what?
He's driving this car.
Yes. So Mr. Bean is
that's
driving
it.
The vehicle.
Okay. Now I'm caught up. So where is the police vehicle?
I'm about to show you.
Okay.
So this is the embankment that they went over. They flew over that cop car and landed into this wall. And that is the laundromat.
And they didn't hit or hurt anyone in this
So
process.
What happens, I just wanted to provide the pictures for what we're talking about. So that is what happens. But so what happens is they hit that, right? Obviously, the cops in that car, they're like having lunch.
Yeah,
the
that's what I'm saying.
The cops were like chilling, having lunch, okay? So they obviously see a
so
car
bad.
Going over their car and landing into a building. So they get out, okay, and they're trying to apprehend the people in this car, okay? Somebody has been shot because from when they were, well... It's up for debate who shot him, but people have been shot, and so everybody scatters. The police comes over, everybody scatters. People are, of course, arrested and taken to the hospital because they have injuries. Okay, Adrian Bean. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's one of the people. He is the driver of this vehicle. Okay, so Adrian Bean is arrested. There's two other people who are arrested. They go to the hospital, and afterward.
Can we back up for a second?
Sure.
The police officers here have no idea what's happening right now.
No idea. They were literally having lunch. One of them was a trainee. She was like there. It was like her, or like day two.
Can
She's
you
being
imagine
trained.
They yeah. talking with each other like, "Ooh, you got bologna? Yeah, I got ham sandwich."
Literally. So, and then this happens, okay?
And this happens.
So then what happens is they go to Adrian Bean, again, who is the driver. He had some warrants, some previous warrants.
Okay.
So he is allegedly taken to the hospital and then arrested, obviously, okay? Now, that is the context. Here's the situation. Here's the situation. The state is saying, okay, the prosecutors in this case are saying that when that happened, Young Thug got out of the vehicle, jumped a fence, a barbed wire fence, and got away. That is what the state is saying. So they're saying there were a total of four people in the vehicle. Young Thug got away. The others were essentially captured. Mm-hmm. Okay. The problem is the state puts the officers, all these officers, they put them on the stand and they ask them, who was there? What y'all see? And some of the police officers say there was three people. Some of them say there was four people. Some of them say there was a woman. Some of them say it was all men. Okay. So the story is like really confusing. Some of them say there was a red shirt, there was a white shirt, there's a blue shirt. It's not really clear. Mm-hmm. They don't have the same story. Okay. And so in order for the state to place Young Thug at the scene, which again is very important because this is a RICO case. Okay. So it has to be like very tied to the crimes, and then it has to be in furtherance of the gang. That is the point. So they need to place him there and the officers can't do it. So then they call Adrian Bean, okay, who again was the driver, to the stand. Adrian Bean is on the stand for 5 days, and every single question that they ask him, he says,
I don't remember.
That's not very helpful for the state because he won't confirm or deny who was there. He literally said, "I don't remember anything from 2000. I kid you not, he said, "I don't remember anything from 2013, the whole year."
The two officers in this vehicle, though.
Yes.
Their statement, they
got different stories.
Really?
They don't know. Everybody has a different story.
Corruption.
So what happens is because the state can't get Adrian Bean to confirm Thug was there and the officers don't, they end up playing two things. Number one, they play an interview that Adrian Bean had with a detective 6 days after this incident. 6 days following this incident,
okay.
Adrian Bean is picked up by a detective. He's in jail. He's picked up by a detective, and it gives his statement as to what happened. And the state says this is their proof. This is Adrian Bean saying that Young Thug was there. So hold on. Let's play the clip. So this is
this sounds like the truth. You're the driver. You really cleared something up for me, the Thug, and I gotta go out here and find a picture of this joker. Because it's important. Because I don't think he should get away with it if he was in the car. You're not making this up. Thug was in the car.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, let me
Now, I can't testify. I can't do nothing.
All right, you ain't got to testify.
Okay, so you hear him say Thug was in the car. Okay, that is his statement. 6 days after the day of the incident, he tells detectives, yes, Thug was in the car. And as the two of them, the detective is taking Adrian Bean back to the jail because they've essentially wrapped up their interview. And he tells him again that Thug was in the car. He tells him a second time.
Be straight up with you. You don't know when to push Thug in the car. I know who the fuck he was. Everybody think he's a woman. You clear that up for me.
Like, he asked me who the fuck a female is, who the fuck a female
like. He look like, out of all y'all, he don't look like a little woman to me, if you know.
Wig, like I'm like a wig.
That's what I always shit out of it.
So what's happening is what the detective has realized is that all those claims that there was a woman in the vehicle is actually Young Thug, because Thug has locks. He has long locks, and apparently they have some color to them. And so what he's saying is, Adrian Bean, you've just cleared it up. You are telling us that there is no woman. It's actually Young Thug, and he got away. Okay. So that is the basis of the state's entire claim. He's like, they're literally like, Adrian Bean told the officer this happened. Okay. They also have a jail call because Adrian Bean, while he was in jail, he called his wife. And the wife was three-waying people. So, of course, the police start listening to the jail calls. And on the jail calls, he again incorporates Young Thug.
Me and Thug got there. We get out of the car and run. I just went the wrong motherfucking way, man. I should have followed Thug.
Should have followed Thug.
So they're like, hello. Obviously, Thug was there. Okay? Now, on the flip side of all of this,
I don't care what side you look at Thug, front, back, side. This man does not look like a female.
Well, they talk about
a lady. He doesn't look like a young
lady. They talk about his size. He's small. He has hair. All of this. Okay, so
man, he's like 6'3".
Is he?
This dude is huge.
I don't think he's 6'3".
Yeah, he is a real tall guy.
Okay, on the flip side, Young Thug's attorney, of course, is saying Young Thug was never there. This is a lie. And Thug's attorney interviewed Adrian Bean about a year ago. Okay, this happened in 2013. Brian Steele interviewed Adrian Bean in January of 2023. And in that interview, Adrian Bean tells him, Thug was not there. He was never there. The only reason I said that is because the detectives told me to say that. And I said it on the jail call because I knew they were listening. I did all of that because they told me if I incorporated Young Thug, then I would get out of jail early. So that's why I said that. But no, he was never there. So here is a clip from the interview that Adrian Bean had with Young Thug's attorney. Okay?
Participant, giving direction, anything involved in that event that we're talking about involving Dirty Red in September 11, 2013.
No, sir. Okay. Like I explained, you know, when, you know, all that occurred, everything took place, you know, they was, you know, trying to force him in on something that he wasn't even meant. Like I said, I'm not going to lie on the brother. You know what I mean? You know, he wasn't with us. Young Thug was not in the car with us that day. I don't even know how his name really got mentioned. Maybe it's a lot of hype.
So you hear him say, Young Thug was not there. He was not with us. I don't even know how his name got brought up. I don't even know. That's crazy. They saying Thug was there.
What happened was,
I've never heard of that. Yeah. So Young Thug's team is like, no, Thug was not there. And here's the proof of this man saying he was not there. Yeah. So all of this is getting played for the jury, and they have to figure out what to believe.
You don't believe this guy. You can't. He's, first of all, I'm high as hell right now.
That's what he said. And I gotta find the
clip. I'm about to go to sleep on y'all.
He did say that. But wait, hold on, because that's not even it, right? Brian Steele is saying that when Adrian Bean went to the hospital on the day of the incident, he was at the hospital, and Brian Steele, Young Thug's attorney, says that Adrian Bean gave a statement to police and that statement did not include Young Thug. That statement, however, has gone missing, according to Brian Steele. He says that Adrian gave the statement. The statement went missing because it didn't include Young Thug. The detectives told him, make another statement, and it better include Young Thug. And that's the statement that happened 6 days later. And so Brian Steele starts alleging, literally, in court, he says that the state is corrupt. He's like, y'all are corrupt. Where's the statement? And she's like, there is no statement. I don't know what you're talking about. And so the proof that Brian Steele has to the judge to say that there is another statement is particularly there. When Adrian Bean was talking to the detective in that first interview that I played, he says, I lied to detective when I talked to them at first. Yeah. Mind you, this is supposed to be the first time he's talking to a detective. So hold on, let me just play it really quick.
Landed on. So you were driving the car?
Yes, sir.
There was
a lot to the detectives when they first came to talk to me. And I told
what you
them,
talking?
That's probably the lies you talking about.
What you talking about?
I told them that Big Fred was driving.
So you heard him say, I lied to detectives when I first talked to him. And he's like, what you saying? What you talking about? What you tell him?
Shh, don't say nothing.
Essentially. And that's Brian Steele's point is like, he's trying to cover up that he already gave a statement. Mm-hmm. This is actually the second statement. And the state says no. Okay, that's the wrap up. What do you say?
I say Mr. Bean is hilarious, for one. And he's not credible, for two.
Yeah, he's not credible.
At all. It's also crazy that you have to, that the jury has to somehow
figure out.
Not even figure out, because the evidence is the evidence. The man is lying.
With which time? Both times?
He's lying. Okay, so he gave one statement.
Uh-huh.
Which makes sense. Thug wasn't there.
So you believe Brian Steele, you believe that he gave a statement at the hospital?
Yes, of
okay.
course. Because
right.
obviously he said when I talked to him the first
at
time.
At first, okay.
Okay. Then them saying there was a female in the car. Oh, that must have been Thug because he got dreads and he looks like a female.
Well, but Adrian, no. Okay, all right.
Hold on. Yeah. He looks like a Thug, not saying women can't get 6'3", but Thug is 6'3", dreaded up, long, lanky.
Yes.
Nothing about him fits a young lady's description.
Okay.
All right. And for the third time, this man has come. Well, this is my third reason why they should actually just throw him out.
They should throw Adrian Beaton's testimony out, is
yeah.
what you're saying.
Everything about him away.
Yeah, yeah.
He came into court talking about, I'm high as hell right now.
He did that yesterday. That was the last
and
day,
I'm
Greg.
I'm about to fall asleep on y'all.
I mean, he said he hasn't remembered anything. I just want to quickly address Patreon. The question was Thug there or not in the first statement? The first statement that nobody has proof of that was allegedly at the hospital, Thug was not included, according to Brian Steele.
Yes.
Thug was not included in the first statement that has gone missing. And the second statement, which is from when he talked to the detective that I was playing, he obviously says Thug was there.
One question I do have. Who is Bean?
Adrian Bean.
Adrian
uh-huh.
Bean.
That was for me. Uh-huh.
To Thug.
So Adrian Bean knew, he's actually years older than Young Thug, and Adrian Bean is better acquainted with Young Thug's dad. So he says, I really knew his daddy. I don't really know him like that. I don't know Jeff like that, is what he says. Oh. And so they, you know, apparently do crimes together, allegedly, but he says that they don't really have a relationship. The other thing, just so we can, unless you had more to say on this one, because I have one more thing about it.
Just a thought.
Okay.
You all, I'm from Atlanta, and I haven't been immersed amongst my people in a long time. But listening to this case, mm-hmm. I really hear the accent.
Oh, my goodness.
That comes from Atlanta.
Oh,
now.
My gosh.
And you know how you speak?
His wife, Adrian Bean's wife, was on the phone like, Bean, where your head was?
Man.
What you were doing though? I said, oh my God, this sounds like Atlanta. This sounds like Gregory and all of his friends.
I've never heard that.
He said, I made the news. It was so
funny.
Do
you know how people speak and they say, they were like, man, you know what? People in Atlanta use goddamn.
Oh my goodness.
They were like, boy, you seen this over here? Goddamn.
Yeah.
Man, that joint was high as hell. Goddamn.
My goodness, it's so
Instead
funny.
Instead of saying they were like, goddamn.
It is so funny.
You feel me? Goddamn.
Yes. It is so funny. That has cracked me up.
That's
okay.
All I got to say.
Here's the last thing. Only because you talked about Adrian Bean's credibility, and of course, that is what the jury has to decide on. Like, is he credible, and when was he credible? Was he credible when he said Thug was there? Was he credible when he said he wasn't there? Here's the thing, okay? In the very beginning, in the opening statements, mm-hmm. one of the defendant's attorney, his name is Max Shart. I love him. He's great. Okay. There are so many defendants, and everybody has a lot to say. And this trial is supposed to last a year. So as a juror, you are going to be trying to keep up with who said what. I think it was so smart that Max Sharp did something in his opening statement, and he talks about the Fulton County blue, okay? Well, let me just play it. It's going to be better if I play it. Just hold on.
Men wearing blue, Fulton County blue, they've lost control of their lives. They've lost control of their destiny. Their destiny is now in the hands of the judicial system, in the hands of prosecutors. Ladies and gentlemen, Fulton County blue is going to be a very important color in this case because the state's key witnesses in this case that they're going to call to testify, that I anticipate that they will call to testify against my client, Shannon Stillwell, when they became involved in this case, they were all wearing Fulton County blue.
Okay. So what he's saying is that the key witnesses, some of the key witnesses that the state are going to call mm-hmm. have been inmates, essentially, and mm-hmm. that the state brought them into this case when they were inmates. What he's implying, right, is that they want to not be inmates. So the state offered them deals, okay, help them. You help me and I'll help you, okay? And so that that Fulton County blue has stayed in my mind from the very beginning. When I think about everybody who gave an opening, because there was a lot said, I remember that Fulton County blue. So yesterday, when Adrian Bean was wrapped up, Max Sharp got back up. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to play what he said.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
My name is Max Sharp. I represent Shannon Stillwell. Okay. You have heard in court a recording played to you of Detective Quinn and yourself giving an interview on September 17th of 2013, correct?
Yeah, I heard it. I still don't recall.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to ask you to recall the words that were said. In that interview with Detective Quinn, you were wearing a navy blue jumpsuit issued by the Fulton County Jail, correct?
I don't remember what I was wearing at the time.
Okay. Detective Quinn picked you up at the jail, correct?
I don't remember.
At the jail, you wear Fulton County issued navy blue jumpsuits, correct?
I think they gave you some clothes to wear, but I don't remember what I was wearing at the time. Okay.
And you wanted to get that navy blue jumpsuit off of your body, correct?
I don't remember.
You wanted out of jail, correct?
I don't remember.
So what he did was bring back that Fulton County blue. And as a juror, like I said, that has stuck with me. I can only imagine that with all the things they've been talking about, that it has stuck with the jurors. And so for him to circle back to the fact that when you got involved, when they interviewed you on day six after this happened, what color you had on? Fulton County blue. I think he's obviously implying he was getting something out of it. Yeah, I think that was very effective. That's my opinion. I'm not a lawyer, but I think it was effective.
I agree with you. I also agree that, I agree that all these guys, especially Mr. Bean,
he was
getting a deal.
Yeah.
And he started making up things to get out, basically.
Well, I think he's not credible. No, I think on both ends, he's not a credible witness.
If anything,
he should just go away.
This guy's entertaining.
Absolutely. I mean, he was not entertained. That man was up there mad, okay? His number got exposed. It was actually really unfortunate. He said, "Judge, am I on trial? Can I go?" And the judge was like, "It's not how subpoenas work. You have to stay here and you have to testify. But you cannot leave."
So I didn't know that
you have
televised his phone number.
Yeah, so
they played a recording.
Yeah,
and they had his.
They
phone
should
number.
Have taken it out. Honestly, like it's not unheard of that they would have bleeped that. But what happened is when he had his when they played the full recording from when he interviewed with Brian Steele, at the beginning he asked him for his phone number And he said the phone number, and that whole recording was played. And so Adrian Bean said the following day, "I've been receiving threats. I haven't gone to sleep because y'all blasted my whole number.
I'm gonna send them a text.
No, you won't.
All my texts gonna just say, God damn.
You won't do that. Not related to this, you won't. So anyway, that is the YSL wrap up. That's kind of what's happening today. So it was on today, and apparently there is utter chaos. So I have to go catch up because apparently, so Detective Quinn, who also was like on First 48, was on the stand today. But apparently the judge calls Brian Steele unprepared in front of the jury, which is insane that he
Brian
would do
Steele
that.
Not prepared.
It's insane. And so Brian Steele has now asked for him to be recused, for the judge to be taken disqualified from this entire case, like utter chaos. So I have to make the video, obviously. I'm not a lawyer, but TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, all the places.
This
but anyway, that
is
that. That he has been crazy.
Crazy.
He has been absolutely crazy.
I also want to state this. This is like a sitcom show. Police chase, guys in a car, you driving, hit the house, hit the embankment.
Oh yes.
Bow.
Oh yes.
And you like, what's going on?
Oh,
and
yes.
The police just sitting
just
there,
happened to be sitting there.
Eating donuts or
yes,
something.
Yes, yes.
It was like, oh, what's happening?
The lady was like, it was like a scene out of Fast and Furious.
Yes.
She was like, what is happening?
And
like,
then the guys driving probably looked behind them. How in the hell do I jump over and find myself
when he was
crashing right in front
Brian,
of the police?
I mean, Adrian Bean, the detective, was asking Adrian, like, what was y'all doing? And he was a man, it was crazy. We didn't know. The car lost control. He was like, he was freaking out. Yeah, it was crazy. Anyway, let's pivot to Karen Reed. I won't take a ton of time because I want to make sure we get to Vybz Kartel. So quick backstory on Karen Reed. This is a case out of Boston. And what's happening basically is that Karen Reed, her boyfriend at the time, his name was John O'Keefe. They were at a bar, kind of bar hopping. Her boyfriend is a Boston police officer. They ran into some of John's friends who also are in a family of officers. They're invited back to this other officer's house, essentially. Karen drops John O'Keefe off because she doesn't want to stay, says she's not feeling well. She drops her boyfriend, John O'Keefe, off and goes home. Basically, okay, the next morning, John O'Keefe is found dead in front of that police officer, the Alberts. Okay, that's their name. He's found dead in the snow. It's Boston, and it's in, like, January, so it's, like, feet of snow. He is found dead in front of that police officer's house, okay? Karen Reed is eventually indicted. She's charged with killing her boyfriend. They say that when she was pulling away from the house to leave him at the house, she backed her car into him and killed him. That's what they're saying happened, okay? There is a lot of evidence and a lot of things that indicate that John, and they say John never made it inside of the house that night because he was killed prior to. There's a lot of evidence that points to John O'Keefe did go inside of the house, including the steps on his Apple Watch, which indicate he climbed a number of stairs, and that house has stairs. And so it indicates that he entered into that house. Something happened inside of that house. There is then a Google search around 2 a.m. in the morning. He's dropped off around after 12. 2 a.m., okay, the sister-in-law of the owners of the house of the Alberts Googles how long to die in the cold. There were some spelling errors, but she Googles how long to die in the cold. And then four or five hours later, John O'Keefe is found dead in the cold. So obviously Karen Reed and her attorneys are saying she had nothing to do with this, and actually these officers killed her boyfriend. They are a family of officers, very well connected. The lead detective is like goody-goody with this family, which is what her point is. There is like so much corruption and they should have been disqualified. The lead detective has like the Alberts families have babysat the lead detective's kids. And so her point was that this is a conflict of interest. He should have never been, and they didn't disclose that they were friends. It only came out later. So there's a ton of things happening. Okay. This has been going on. The trial was supposed to start. It keeps getting delayed. the even down to the DA, a lot of corruption.
Is she out on bond?
Yes.
Okay, good.
So what happens is that the FBI, okay, it becomes a federal investigation, okay? The feds come in and they start investigating.
They should.
So there was a hearing about a week or two ago. And at this hearing, some of what has been found out in the investigation, her attorneys present, okay? And I just want to say, this is the interesting part.
This case is crazy.
Injuries were inconsistent with the damage on the car. In other words, the car didn't hit him, and he wasn't hit by the car.
It was a little cut off, but what he's saying is that the federal investigation, they had a reconstruction expert redo this scene and also obviously examine his body. And what the feds and their experts have determined is that there was no contact made between John O'Keefe and her vehicle that night, which essentially blows up the entire case. So I don't even know why they continued at that hearing, because I was like, wait, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. They literally, the feds are literally saying that didn't happen.
But you remember, they made up this whole thing because in her driveway, she backed up and she hit a car.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's on the outside of her driveway. And when I tell y'all, the snow, it's Antarctica snow.
It's Boston. It's the East Coast. It's cold.
The wheel, you press the gas, your wheels spin.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's no way in the world she gained enough speed in that little driveway where she was to hit this man to the point where
and
he
was
just
reversing.
Died.
When you reverse, you're not going 30, 60 miles an hour.
But even if
generally not doing that.
Even if she tried,
she couldn't.
Because the wheels were spinning.
Absolutely.
And this is all on a Ring camera. And you could see, that, man, this lady did not hit this man with
the wheel. The Ring camera is from her house when she reversed, not from when he was out in the snow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
She reversed, they're trying to say she hit him because there was damage
on her vehicle. Right.
The damage came from her hitting another vehicle backing out of her driveway, which is on camera.
Yeah. Yeah. They're also another thing that her attorneys raise in this hearing. So the whole point of the hearing is that her attorneys are saying this entire case should be dismissed based off of, I forgot the name of the rule, but basically they say that, actually, I probably have it. Let me play it, actually.
The basic rule of Odell, we start with the postulate that any distortion of the evidence, that's where we start, any distortion of the evidence during the course of a grand jury proceeding impairs the integrity of the indictment, if there is an indictment, and pursuant to Odell, that requires dismissal. In this particular case, there were myriad examples, which I was gonna go through several, but I'll just touch on.
So what he's saying is that anytime there's a distortion of evidence, the case has to be dismissed. And so he's citing this rule of Odell, this Odell rule. And so he's saying that the evidence in this case has been distorted, and he has a number of reasons. The main thing is they tried to say that how long to die in the cold. The state is saying that actually was Googled at 6 a.m. and not 2 a.m., but the FBI says it was at 2 a.m. It wasn't at 6 a.m. And then they're also saying about this conflict, the fact that these lead detectives are friends with the home in which this crime occurred. Like, they're literally, and they did not disclose that to anyone. And so that's a part he's saying. Oh, and so the other thing I'll just quickly say is when his body is found. So what happens the following morning is that Karen Reed and a group of people, women, like two others, are driving around trying to find John because he never comes home that night. So they end up going back to the house that she dropped him off at. And as they're pulling up, she sees him laying in the snow. And she's like, oh my gosh. They go outside and so he's dead. The owners, the Alberts, who, again, he is an officer, okay? It's his home. He never comes outside.
Yeah.
And so what her attorney alleges when he's talking here, he says he never comes outside because he was waiting. He calls it, he was waiting for a friendly. He was waiting for the lead detective, who just so happens to be a good friend of his, to pull up, and now everything's fine. Because otherwise, he may have been he wouldn't have just been in the house chilling. So anyway, that is what they're alleging. But this other
one of the videos you showed ended up showing his arm scratched up.
Yeah.
Did you didn't mention that the house, that these police officers had a family dog.
Yeah, they had a family dog.
Now, y'all know, just people in general with pets, they love their pets. Just regular pets.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 10 times, 100, 1,000 times more intense when it's a police officer's dog.
Oh, absolutely. I can only imagine.
How about?
I can only imagine.
After this situation,
they sell the dog.
They sell the dog.
They get it was a family dog that they've had for like 7 years,
a German
and they have kids, and all of a sudden they just get rid of the dog.
They get rid of the dog, and
you saw John O'Keefe's arm.
His arm, that's on the screen. His arm was scratched up. Now, did that come from a bumper?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So somebody said Cujo did it in the Patreon comments. Hilarious.
Cujo did it.
So this is the last thing I'm going to play from the hearing. Let me play it, then I'll give the context. I think I reached my...
We all looking for the dog.
Yeah, the dog gone.
We need to pull some DNA from underneath his nails.
February 1st, 2022, 3 days after John O'Keefe was killed.
How can I turn this?
There was another text message. In this one, Michael Proctor's sister texts Michael Proctor very specifically and writes the following, quote, "Just saw Julie, and Julie said when all this is over, she wants to give you, Michael Proctor, a thank you gift." Michael Proctor didn't respond with, "That's inappropriate."
Let me just give the context since it was sideways. Michael Proctor is the lead detective on this case. What he just said is that Julie Albert, who is the wife of the police officer whose home this man was found dead in front of, okay, so his wife texts the lead detective's wife and says, when this is all over, we need to buy you a gift. Mm-hmm. And then Michael Proctor, the lead detective, says, don't get a gift for me. Get it for... Actually, it was his sister, because then he says, don't get it for me. Get it for my wife. Don't give me the gift. Give it for my wife. To be less suspicious is what the attorney alleges. The fact that
y'all
would
gifting.
Even text about gifting is silly. Are y'all the cops? Are the cops in the room with us? Do you guys investigate crimes? Because you're really bad at committing them.
This is wild.
Yeah.
And then
yes, they also sold the home. Sorry, I just saw it in the Patreon. So the house was never searched, okay? Because the lead detective is the friend, obviously. So the house is never searched, even though Karen Reed is like, I saw him go in the house. They're like, no, he never came in the house. So the house is never searched, and then they sell the home within like, let's call it 4 months. Yeah.
I forgot they sold the home. But selling the dog is worse. I would.
Well, Karen Reed's a team.
Wasn't the owner his son?
So
his son had something to do.
So the owner's son, was a high schooler at the time, and he had previously allegedly gotten to a beef with John O'Keefe, the man who's now dead.
Yes.
There was a previous interaction in which they had gotten into some kind of altercation. Apparently, this son is also known to be a bit of a hothead because, again, his dad is an officer, his uncle's an officer, his granddaddy was an officer. Mm-hmm. He comes from a home, a whole family of officers. Mm-hmm. So what they're saying is that he's a bit of a hothead and does what he wants, and he knows he can get away with it.
And he was there at the house.
And
that
he
night
was
the,
it was
well.
A party for him, apparently. Yeah. Anyway. That's that. The trial date is not yet. I don't think the judge has to rule. The whole point of that hearing was that they were asking for all of it to be dismissed. They're saying that this has been tampered with, this evidence, this trial, everything. And so they were asking for it to be dismissed. So the judge has to rule on if the case will be dismissed.
And this is where?
Boston.
Boston.
Yeah.
I think they giving Atlanta a run for their money.
Wow.
Talk about a circus.
A circus.
Yeah.
Okay, let me get to the last one because so this one is very interesting.
They sold the dog.
They did sell the dog.
That's they all guilty. They sold the dog. Moving on.
All right. So this one is Vybz Kartel. This is the like I said, it was overturned. His conviction was overturned. Let me set it up a little bit before I go to it. His conviction was overturned. Okay, Vybz Kartel is a Jamaican artist, and what is fascinating that I learned a little bit, all of it is, but
yeah,
a little
don't
bit
know anything about this one.
A little bit of what I learned is that basically Jamaica's version of the Supreme Court goes up through London. The Brits, which makes sense. I had just never thought about it. So they have this trial in Jamaica. They appeal it also in Jamaica. Okay, the appellate court in Jamaica stays the conviction. He's convicted, and then the defendants appeal again, and so it goes over to the Brits. And so this ruling actually came from the British court, and they are the ones who overturned it. Okay, Anyway, so that's who overturned it. Now, let me give you context as to what happened.
So they have to... So London has, or England, or whatever, the Brits have the ultimate control over serious cases like this.
If it's like their version of Supreme Court, right? Like, if you in Georgia, if you have a trial and then you appeal to the appellate court, that's also in Georgia. But you can also, after that point, you can appeal to the Georgia Supreme Court. After that point, you can appeal to like the Supreme Court. Their version of the Supreme Court, it seems, is and I'm saying the big Supreme Court, not just like the Georgia Supreme Court, is in London.
Hello, want a cup of tea?
Yeah. Which again makes sense when you think about like colonization. Here's what happened. These are the defendants, the names up there: Sean Campbell, Adida, I'm gonna say Palmer. That the Palmer person is actually Vybz Kartel. He's actually the musician. And then there's Kahira Jones, Andre St. John, and then it's versus the respondent and number two Jamaica. I'm not sure what that part is, because again, this was all new to me, but here we go. What happens, I'm going to give you context about the crime first, okay? And the crime that this would happened, okay, is that there was a guy named, what was his name? Lizard. His nickname was Lizard. It was Clive Lizard Williams. They call him the deceased, but we're going to call him Lizard.
Okay.
Lizard and a man named Lamar Chow, okay? So Lizard and Lamar were given some guns by Vybz Kartel. I mean, yeah, that's his name, Vybz, by the musician. They're given some guns. He had given them a deadline in which they needed to return the guns back to him. It was like 8 p.m. on August 14th, 2011. The time came and they didn't return the guns, okay? And so it is alleged as a consequence that he told them to come to his house. And when they came, he said, "Where my guns at?" And they was like, "We gonna get them. We gonna get them." And then he attacked them. Okay. Lamar Chow gets away.
Okay.
Lizard was never seen or heard from again after that day. Okay. That's what they said happened. Jamaica don't come get me. That's just what they said. So police officers go, Chow gets away and he goes to the police. He like, "Look, they tried to kill me now and my homeboy is gone." So the police come to Vybz Kartel's house, and when they get there, they say that they smell disinfectant. They the whole backyard had been destroyed. I think it had like been set on fire. The interior of the house, they like set it on fire. So all of these things happen. They never find a body, but they eventually arrest all of the men, including Vybz Kartel, including the musician. As a part of the investigation, the police officers get phones, obviously. And so they say that on these phones, there's some communications that they say prove their story. I'm not sure exactly what they found on the phones, but that is a part of the document, that there were some phones. They did an extraction of the phone, and they did they did a version one and a version two. The version two was supposedly just a copy of the version one. What happens is one of the detectives who was given version one, he died. And so version one was never found again.
He died, but how did
he? I don't know. He just died. So then when the trial came, all they had to use was version two.
Okay.
Okay. So that's the first thing. Okay. So the trial happens. They present their little version two. They talk about all the evidence that they have. And they end up convicting all but one of those defendants for the crime. Okay? Okay. Everybody is convicted of murder. Now, here is why Bibes Cartel appealed the decision for three reasons. He says that the extraction, the phone extraction, the version two should have never been used.
Okay.
He also says that there were some bribery happening with the jurors.
Mm-hmm.
And he also talks about the time in which the jurors had to deliberate. I'm going to expound on each of those, but those are the three reasons that they say that it should be overturned.
Question.
Yes.
Was the body ever found?
Never found.
Oh, he innocent then.
Okay.
Don't close say. Case.
So here's what happened for when it comes to the phone, the court actually said, we're not going to talk about that. We ain't got nothing to do with that. Y'all, that's y'all business. They literally are like, we're not going to rule on that. But when it comes to the jury issues, here's what it breaks down to. Okay. There was a first jury incident in which one of the jurors had some kind of encounter with one of the attorneys. Okay. The judge does his investigation, but he ultimately decides, everybody feels like, no, it just was kind of a coincidence, kind of happenstance, not a big deal. So the judge rules, okay, not a big deal. We can keep going. This juror is juror X. Okay. Mm-hmm. Juror X has this encounter. It's fine. Now, the second juror, and so that one is squashed. The second juror incident happens a little bit later, and it was juror number 11. Okay. What happens is she has a son who is incarcerated. Her son, she goes up to see her son, and she runs into one of the defendants while she's going to see her son at the jail. Okay. He's like in the lobby. She's trying to get checked in, and they see each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a very obvious, okay? She sees him, talks to her son, it's fine. When she returns the following whatever to go see her son again, her son mentions, hey, yo, when I was in the jail, because that's where I be, Bob's Cartel, they had approached me a little bit. And so yeah, they just, they didn't say nothing, but like they kind of approached me, okay? So then the juror 11 freaks out. And she's like, I'm scared for my son. What if they do something to my son?
Yeah.
So she goes and tells the judge. The judge is questioning her. And it literally says in here that she's like hysterical. She's like breaking down. And so the judge is like, she became distressed. So the judge is like, I'm not even going to ask no more questions. We're just going to take you off of the case.
Yes. Take me off.
So they take her off of the case. And then they just tell the rest of the jurors that, like, there was an issue. Don't worry about it. She's gone. Okay. Now, shortly after that.
Dang.
Uh-huh. Shortly after that, the forewoman goes to the judge's chambers. And she says, Juror X from that first incident has been telling people, the jurors, that we need to vote not guilty. No. We need to vote guilty, actually. Mm-hmm. He's been bribing us with money. He was literally offering $500,000. Here it is. Let me just read it. He had attempted to persuade another member of the jury by offering a $500,000 to do a particular thing, to go which way. At first, they were saying, I don't know which way it is, but whatever. And so the forewoman, before she tells the judge, this happens, and the forewoman doesn't immediately go to tell the judge. Instead, she starts asking all the other jurors if juror X has also tried to bribe them. They all say yes. Mm. After she asks everybody, she goes and tells the judge, this is happening. I don't know if you know, but they're trying to bribe us to make these people guilty, okay? So the judge...
I'm taking the 500.
Listen. So the judge is like, well, we have to have... They've already released one juror.
Mm-hmm.
if they release this other juror X, they'll be down to, it was 11, 10. You can't have less than 10. So if they release this this juror, they now don't have a complete jury. So they have to start all over. And it is the last day of the trial. They are about to give it to them to deliberate. Okay.
Wow.
So the judge is like, I don't really got time for this. The judge is like,
hey, he don't listen. Pay the judge.
The judge says, hey, now.
Y'all better take that 500.
Everybody just act like that didn't happen and go vote now. Everybody go vote. Act like that didn't happen. Okay. So the judge allows the jurors to, he just is essentially, he says, I'm gonna talk to them. So what he does is he calls them back in, okay, and he basically says, just remember that when you are deliberating, you can only think about the facts that were presented. You can't think about anything else. You got to think about what you saw in the court. And so he retires them to deliberate, and then they vote. So what happens is the forewoman comes in. Let me get the time, because the time is actually important.
Wow.
At.
I wonder what 500K in Jamaican,
what it translates
money.
To.
Yeah. It can't be that much, though.
Okay. So they go back at 3:42 p.m. Okay. Mm-hmm. At 5:35 p.m., the forewoman says, hey, we all can't agree. It's 10-1. And so the judge says, not even the judge, one of the attorneys says, we can't, apparently, you know, in America, you need unanimous. Mm-hmm. But over there, apparently, you can have a majority rule. And so they're like, it's 10-1. But the attorney and the judge agrees, in order for us to use the majority ruling, mm-hmm. you have to deliberate for a certain period of time. And we haven't reached that time yet. So go back and deliberate some more.
Yeah.
So this is at 5:35 that they're like, you got to deliver. We're not there yet. So then at 6:08, like
30 minutes later,
the forewoman comes back and she's like, hey, it's 10-1. And they're like, oh, okay, it's time now. So then they're like, guilty. And hey. So they're found guilty. So the Supreme Court, their version of the Supreme Court says, what the hell is going on over there?
Who is this juror?
Yeah. Mind you, as soon as they rap and they get found guilty, Juror X gets arrested for bribing the jurors, because that's a crime. Witness tampering, juror tampering.
No one got paid, though.
Well, but here's the thing. That juror was trying to get them to vote guilty. Not guilty, which is actually surprising, because you would think that it was the defendants who are trying to get people, like, yo, mm-hmm. but he was trying to get people to vote guilty.
Because he probably friends with the dude that disappeared.
Maybe. So
also,
anyway.
500K in Jamaican is $3,245 in America.
So, but hold on, because that's only, there's one more thing that happens. So the Supreme Court basically is like, that juror should have been removed from the trial. And that's number one. Number two, yes, that would have essentially resulted in a mistrial. You had to start all over, and you chose not to. Mm-hmm. That is all a problem. And this was not a fair trial for the defendants, essentially, is what they say. This was not a fair trial. Now, the last thing is that, like I said, they were gone away to deliberate at 3:42.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the rule in Jamaica, right, which is very similar to America, is that when a jury deliberates, sometimes they are sequestered. Sometimes they are put into a hotel, right, until a decision can be come mm-hmm. up with. In Jamaica, you have to stay together, right? You have to, the jurors cannot separate until they come to a decision. But they don't put you in a hotel in Jamaica. They would have just had to stay in the chambers deliberating.
What?
And so, when he retired them at 3:42, they were about to be there. They was going to be stuck.
Yeah.
And so what their version of the Supreme Court is saying is that you cannot give any undue pressure to a jury to come up with a decision. And because you retired them at 3:42, they come back at 5:35 and then come back again at 6:08. And they're just like, sorry, we can't. It's 10-1. They're basically like, you put undue pressure on them. And that also is unfair. So throw this whole thing out.
Yeah.
So that's what happened.
They probably came out, man, it's 6 o'clock, man. You know, I got to get home, cook dinner.
And that's all what they, this. That's my literally what it says. Get out of school. You can't have jurors thinking about traffic, thinking about daycare, thinking about whatever. And you cannot rush them. You cannot have them thinking about that and still expect them to be able to fully deliberate and give like the care and thought that is necessary for a trial.
So the judge has no responsibility or repercussions in this situation because he knew about it or she knew about it. And she was like, hey.
You know, they kind of address the judge in here, the court does, and they talk about how what a unenviable position that the judge was in regarding that juror X situation. She had the judge had already dismissed one juror. If you dismiss the second one, this is the last day of trial. All of a sudden, you're starting all over. Like, how that's a sucky situation to be in. However, they made the wrong call.
If you all don't know, my mother is Jamaican.
She sure is.
And when my grandfather, my grandparents in Jamaica, they had basically a farm, I guess you could say, land up in the hills in the grill. He had goats, chickens, a whole bunch of land. Well, when my grandfather passed away, my grandma was there. And then cousins, so-called cousins and uncles, moved in with my grandma. They took over the house, right? Grandma said, okay, cool. Y'all can take care of the house. I'm going to move to England with my daughters. Y'all just take care of the property. Nah, that property's gone.
Oh, I'm sure.
No lawyer, no judge, no police, no type of authority could get them that property back. Because they just took it. Ruthless.
Ruthless.
So I can only imagine this dude giving them propositions for money.
Somebody's over there.
The judge was probably, they probably got to the judge too. Like, man, go on, get this out. I ain't trying to get killed or hurt or whatever it is.
Well, but I guess what's so interesting, and they actually bring it up, is that because the bribe was to be guilty, which is in opposition, obviously, to the defendants, it would have been the people who would have had the issue would have been the state, would have been the prosecutors, right?
Yeah.
And so, but apparently when the judge was talking to the attorneys about it, the prosecutors were like, well, it's fine. So that's aided the judge in saying, okay, if you guys aren't tripping,
I ain't
tripping either. Like, let's keep it going. But that, of course, everybody should have due process. Like, you're entitled to a fair trial. You're entitled to, you know, your situation to be as fair to you as it is to any other side. Like, it should all be fair around the board. And obviously this wasn't. But anyway, it was very interesting.
Guan Bai.
They actually,
Guan.
They type the way that one of the, it's typed. What they quote somebody, and it is like, yeah,
stuff.
I was reading it like, oh my gosh, I want to like say this out loud, but I would sound silly. Anyway, that is.
Hold on, he was found guilty, but then the Brits overturned it.
Yeah.
So he's a free man. Their crew is free now.
I'm not sure. You know, like in America, right? If your conviction gets overturned, okay, many times you can go back to the status that you had prior to the conviction. So if you are in jail while your trial is going on, right, you could get overturned and remain in jail, okay,
until
you are retried or until the state or the prosecutor say, actually, we're not going to try this again, and then you could get released. So I'm not sure. It's not like, bang, let him out. It's kind of like, bang, okay, now what? So and also, I'm not in Jamaica, and I don't know how they work, so I don't know if he's in jail or not. I'm not a lawyer, but I'm an American citizen, so I don't know what other people do.
If there's no body, there's no case.
Oh, absolutely. That's not how that works.
Oh.
You know that. How many people have never been found? And yet...
Who's been locked
up? You can prove a case without a body. It's harder, but you can prove... You can prove a case without a body.
What's the lion lady? Tiger King?
Tiger King.
She got rid of her husband.
Uh-huh.
Well, we assume she did, because we don't know, because there's no body. So yeah. She's... That's the only case I got.
All right. We did it.
That's the only case.
It's been an hour. It was a little jumpy in the beginning, but it'll get better. Amen. Okay. I hope y'all enjoyed. If you are in the Patreon, obviously give me your thoughts. Okay. If you're not in the Patreon and you're watching this, join the Patreon. Be a part of the conversation. Send us things you want us to cover. That's kind of what we're going to be doing. Appreciate y'all. What you guys
love
say?
Love it. They sold the dog.
Oh, my gosh.
That's it.
Okay. I'm Not a Lawyer, But on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube channel is I'm Not a Lawyer, But. Patreon is I'm Not a Lawyer, But.
Mm-hmm.
Where, what's your name?
UnderreppedMerch.com is where you can find the merch if it's not sold out, because our supporters be supporting.
Amen.
I'm Goolsby. You can catch me on IG. That's GOOLZBY. I also have a podcast with Marcus Tanksley on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Let us tell it. Check it out.
High five. We did it.
That's cool.